we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an idea for which I hope to live for and to see realized. But my Lord, if it needs be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die.
Seriously, it's like a few years out of apartheid. You know, there was a lot of damage done.
You sent the fire wagon in after most of the houses had burned down.
Soweto, where you come from? Soweto, where you come from? Mandela, 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 want to be here comes.
Everyone in South Africa knows someone who's infected or who has passed away. Well, I don't think we can even attribute 0.11% of our figures to mainline drug abuse.
Right.
It's sexually transmitted and mother to child. Right. Now, we've reduced that magnificently. So there's just a hell of a lot of sex happening in this country. Not that I'm getting any of it, but you know, to just look at our teen pregnancies.
Yeah.
One school had 55 kids pregnant. I mean, please. So if you're pregnant, you haven't used a condom.
Okay.
Don't tell me it burst, because then there are too many burst condoms in South Africa, and we should sue the supplier. I think we're the rape center of the world. Our figures quoted last year were something like 65,000 reported rapes. So you can times that by three, at least.
In South Africa, there were 65,000 reported rapes and sexual assaults in 2012. In the United States, 84,376 reported rapes and sexual assaults in 2012.
I'm beginning to stand in the pulpit and funeralize young women. We just buried a young lady in February, 26 years old, who died with three children, their three babies. We have a governor who does not want to talk about HIV. I think he believes that it will affect our tourism if we put up a billboard on the road that shows HIV positive people or have the kind of conversation we need to have. We know for a fact that wherever I dust is where I'm going to find the dirt.
Hey.
So they're asking, why are our numbers so high? Well, now you're beginning to test in my community. But the fire was there a long time ago. But you didn't tell me that my house was on fire. You sent the fire wagon in after most of the houses had burned down.
Hi.
don't be surprised, because I mean, there are a lot of people out there that are HIV positive and they look just like me, you know. I think definitely in regards to media, I think the TV has definitely in regards to Africa also, like if you think about AIDS or HIV, you just see like this skinny, like lots of flies hovering over you kind of image.
Yeah.
And I think that is the snake in the grass right there, you know, because people just assume, okay, well, if they look healthy and then everything is fine. I think, you know, I personally, if I could have done anything different, I would have preferred to have definitely always use protection, which I didn't. My bad.
So your experience of South Africa and the U.S., how would you compare the two? If I know that's sort of weird to ask, but what do you think are the differences between South Africa and the U.S.?
I can say for how I live and how I am, it's not that different. But then you also have the people that you've also interviewed who literally live in maybe 10 houses or whatever, and that part of South Africa is completely different to what the States is. So,
in South Africa, 26.2% of the population live in poverty. In the United States, 16% of the population live in poverty.
People get different services based on race. People get different services based on sexual identity. People get different services based on gender. People get different services based on where they live at. Mm-hmm. You know, so all of these things do impact HIV in Black people, and I believe that. That's why do HIV look any different 30 years? Yeah, there is a population of people out there that it do look different too. There is a population of people out there who's going to be able to embrace healthcare reform because it's going to work for them. But there is still a population of people out there who HIV really don't look that different too. See, there is still a group, some of us who are still going to funerals who should not be having to go to funerals. You know, yeah, we should be at a place 30 years now into this epidemic where there should not be any more AIDS diagnosis. People should be diagnosed with HIV, and it should end there.
Globally, 2.1 million people were newly infected with HIV in 2013.
Like, medically, where do you think we are?
To be honest, I think there's a cure for certain people. I think if you have the money, you can be cured from it, at least have medicine that can keep you from dying from it. But basically, I think that in the future, there will be medications that can slow up or prevent or even cure the disease.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the thought that you said for certain people?
I do.
So who are these certain people?
Well, look at Magic Johnson. He's been living with the virus for over 20 years and it hasn't went anywhere. But a normal person who doesn't have the money to purchase the proper medications die.
Although HIV has become more of a chronic condition to those who have adequate medical care, it still requires a daily regimen of medication that have side effects. Mm. It still requires regular doctor visits and lab tests to check viral load to make sure that the medications are working. Mm-hmm. It still requires that you take certain precautions to take care of yourself and others.
All right.
It was rough. It was almost, if I can compare it, it was almost like the apartheid era in South Africa. Comrades, HIV activists were getting arrested. They were met with the full might of the law. We had to hold public protests. We had to fight. We had to really be vigilant and be kind of like naughty, very, very naughty, and be the bad kids and fight with government.
To get what we needed
and what was essential for people to stay alive. But now, post-denialism, meaning that they stopped being in denial about the whole pandemic, they realized that there was HIV and AIDS and that the only way of dealing with the pandemic was to introduce ARVs that are the only things that have been successfully proven to suppress the virus.
Globally, 1.5 million people died from complications brought on by AIDS in 2013.
It seems like HIV and AIDS seems to be a dominant marker for people's perception of South Africa now. When I was coming up, it was apartheid. And I know that all that as an outsider, though both of those issues are narrativized and are complicated in ways that one could not understand from just being on the outside.
How do you see race being experienced today around you?
For me, Joburg is the most multiracial, comfortable environment in South Africa, in Johannesburg City. And the irony is the minute you go half an hour outside of any sort of border, well, not any, but in a lot of places, there's still a very entrenched idea of the separation, and particularly in towns that were the product of racial segregation or separation, there's still a very entrenched idea of, you'll get stared at, you'll get looked at, multiracial couples are frowned on. And there's a huge irony of having the hub and the center where there feels like there's not a lot of tension, but the minute you leave that, there is still the fear of intimidation and non-acceptance.
When I say the U.S. versus South Africa, or as compared to South Africa, what are the things that sort of come to mind?
Obviously, huge differences is the very first world, third world, or the Africa, South Africa's mixed, definitely both representations of first and second and third world. Recently, being in New York, I was surprised by what seemed to be the amount of economic hardship. Using the subway a lot and seeing a lot of really absolutely exhausted people. And predominantly what I was seeing was that it was in the minority race groups. So it's hard everywhere. And obviously the levels of poverty are not the same. I mean, South Africa, you have people in shacks without jobs, living off what they can scrounge together, which I think is the difference in the idea of what poverty means.
And it's also the case that the disease has moved more and more toward affecting low-income people in the country.
Mm.
Both of those factors, I think, have made the work to continue to be challenging, because it's a population that unfortunately it's hard to get a lot of policymakers and a lot of the general public to care as much about.
Last week, my neurology residents at USC, who are on ward service at County, told me that there were 3 new patients with neurologic opportunistic conditions, cryptococcal meningitis and cerebral toxoplasmosis, which is a parasitic infection that causes brain mass lesions. This shouldn't be happening.
Why did it happen?
Because one of them, at least, was non-adherent to medications, but 2 of them didn't come to get tested until they were gravely ill, presenting to the emergency room, and frankly, presenting at or near death's door. So this is still happening.
This town is not for lack of options for getting tested. So why? I mean, you don't have to have coverage to go get tested here. So why are people still, why are they waiting?
I think there's a stigma still.
Because nobody knows when they would die, you know? Right. No one knows. No one knows. Therefore, one should continue.
Even if you have HIV, still.
Still,
no one knows.
Still. One might die, not through HIV, but something else. Especially here in the townships, you know, we live under fear of being raped, being killed by, you know, by others, being shot, you know, so nobody knows. I could die tomorrow by accident, you know, car accident, shot, might not be HIV.
When I say the United States versus South Africa, what are some of the things that come to mind for you?
My assumption would be that you've got better healthcare systems in place than what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
how do you feel like being a part of the Bible Belt affects the pandemic? Or do you?
I think the AIDS pandemic flourishes where people are not able to deal with it out in the open. And I think probably any part of society where there's a repression of sexuality, a repression of discussion of these issues, where there's a denial going on about it, is going to increase the number of people that become infected. Some of the towns that deal with these problems have a policy of just giving you a bus ticket to the next nearest big city.
Right, get you out of my town, so we don't have that problem.
Exactly. So we don't have to deal with that. We don't have to acknowledge that that's an issue in our community.
So sometimes you find in these cities a higher population with the problem, but that might be because they transplanted themselves to those cities.
And the cities have services that the rural areas and small towns don't have. So sometimes it's self-selection. Sometimes it's been kind of pushed out of the small towns. Sometimes it's because of the services that are available.
Right, because why would you stay at a place that doesn't have services for you?
Exactly.
What do you feel like is the biggest divider in the South between people? Is it race? Is it class? Is it sex? Is it, what is
it's sad to say, but it's still race. Mm-hmm. People don't say it out loud the way that they used to, and you got to kind of keep it undercover because it's not so politically correct anymore.
Right.
But it absolutely happens.
What does it mean to have HIV in the Bible Belt?
The South, God, again, like, I just want these people to get educated. You know, there's so much ignorance behind it and surrounding it. It's just ridiculous. You know, like, there's people who still think you can get it from hugging people and from using the same dishes as people. And it's like, are you serious?
Globally, since the beginning of the pandemic, nearly 78 million people have contracted HIV, and close to 39 million have died from AIDS-related causes.
No matter what you do, you can have white friends, you can go for all kinds of reconciliation, but it's almost like in the air. If you're born into this black body, there's a threat somewhat that you may not succeed. There's a threat somewhat that if you don't kill yourself, someone will kill you. You know?
Definitely.
And not to be so extreme, but it's just like the opportunities are like less, you know, there's language problems and in this country, then there's like family problems and people are traumatized, you know? And under apartheid, I mean, come on. Seriously, it's like a few years out of apartheid. You know, there was a lot of damage done. It feels like what is holding us back is ego and a lot of shame around being, we don't want to be judged, you know? And so it feels like you should allow yourself to be judged, go through that experience. It's like going through the fire. And then on the other side is really what freedom is about.
Where is sex education around HIV in the United States?
It is put into sex education. Totally. It's not part of a, kind of a health curriculum generally, where, you know, in many jurisdictions, you need parental consent in order for the kids to even be in the class. And so you have some parents who won't agree to that. They believe it should be taught at home, but they don't. The mandated curriculum in many school districts was the only way to protect yourself against HIV is to be abstinent. That is not to have sex. Or in some of them, what they say is, you should be abstinent until you're married. Okay, well, of course, in many of those jurisdictions, gay people can't get married. That then contributes to people not knowing how to protect themselves.
Right.
Oral sex is a much safer way to engage in sexual activity. And that condoms are an effective way of avoiding the spread of HIV. But again, there's this moralistic attitude that we can't tell young people about condoms because that will encourage them to have sex as if they need any encouragement.
Come on, your friends are like in their 30s, right? We all learned about AIDS and HIV and sex education. These are things we learned about in our sex ed.
We didn't have sex ed. We didn't even have it.
Wait,
I grew up here.
So
the girls went and had a movie about tampons, and the guys went to the gym and shot hoops. That's what happened.
you know, we had all these conversations in sex education growing up. I didn't realize they don't have that here. I thought that sex education was a thing that was a United States thing. That's a state-to-state thing, sex education.
It is, yeah. And in the South, it's just real touchy. I mean, Louisiana has it better than Mississippi and Alabama, but not much. All the HIV education that we got was pretty much through MTV.
Having HIV in Rockwall, Texas, is...
I feel like I'm a unicorn. I feel like I'm waiting for somebody to cut me and watch a rainbow glitter bleed out of my arm just because they can, and then throw stones at me.
I decided to make this film because I felt something was off about the way we talk about HIV in relationship to Africa. It's a them problem, we're fine. I'm not saying that it's not a problem in Africa. What I'm saying is, it's an us issue. Now what?
You've just experienced Dirty 30, created by Hannah Laurie Williams, produced by Thomas Michael Ferguson, associate producer Michi Hardaway, story editor Crystal Johnson, colorist Jamie Obradovic, sound mixer Matt Guido, additional camera work done by Kenny, Ragland, and Brian. Our intern is Kelsey Burns, legal, Dean Webb, story producers Seville Michelle Amastos, Marie Barath Castillo, Dina Duleb, and Sean Hendrick Santoro. Music in this episode, The City, No Contest, LMB, Flava, Sketch Room Portrait, Passion Overdose, Time Tellers. Special thanks to Jamie Obradovic, Company 3, Matt Guido, Blast Digital, Mark Patrae, Peter Twyman, Tom Viola, Arts Inside Out, Dick Scanlon, Evan Todd, Gail Johnson, Annie Stanton, Molly Stinson, David Goldsmith, 1-9, Joey Chavez, Louis Harris, Louise Harris, Timothy Hardaway, Juliana Harris, Salida Williams, Jim Williams, Warren Adams, Institute Pasteur, ANRS, Jennifer Olin, Sarah Olin, Pete Chapman, Matt Harvey, Caress Rogers, Christian Crummy, and Alex Dunker.